So now we move to our second topic. This will be rather lengthy, on meditation. And it's quite beautiful, really. It's foundational material, and it can be called by a few things. I'm calling it by the traditional term meditation, and I do have a chapter on it in that book, Yielding to Love, which I'll now quote some of. Many people are helped to pray by entering imaginatively into a gospel scene, and I'll do it for you in a moment. We'll practice. Some find this easier to do than others, but many are surprised to find that with persistence they're able to use their imagination better than they at first thought, and that by using their imagination in this way, they find they're less locked into thinking and more engaged at the level of the heart. It may help you, suggestion, to find a quiet place, perhaps a chapel, or a special corner that you've set aside in a room in your home or a favourite spot in the garden. Some people do that. Some cultures have little altars. It's quite lovely, really. You may have that. And they're quite beautiful places. We had pictures of the Sacred Heart and so on in our home as children. And today there's perhaps less of that, but whatever. It's a matter of taste in a way. But someplace you might have a little corner with the sun streaming in and a little lamp there, and when you sit in that particular chair, if you've got room in your home, you may not, it's always you go there to pray. That's your prayer corner. And then the rest of the day you're somewhere else. Some people like doing that, and sounds pretty good to me as an idea. Remind yourself that you're in the presence of God and that Jesus is with you. It's a good way to start your meditation. Read slowly the gospel text that's the subject of your meditation today. Might be the one that's going to be read next Sunday in the Missal, or it might be today's gospel chosen for the liturgy of the word today. Read it aloud if you find this helps, and as you read it, allow your imagination to create the scene. It's good to have read the passage before the time set for the meditation. We were trained, don't often do it now, but I was trained to do it, and sometimes I do. Night before you prepared, so when you went to sleep, the last thing on your mind was the scene that you were going to meditate on in the morning. And a lot happens during the night, and your psyche can work on things, rather than the last thing you see at night be some murder on television, you know, or something else. At the time of the first reading, ask God's Spirit to inspire you to ask for the grace that God wants to offer you in your prayer. What does God want to say to me as I meditate on this scene? Ask. It may be the grace to realize more deeply what Jesus has done for you. It may be the grace to see where you are like the people in the gospel scene and to plead with Jesus for his healing love. You may associate with Mary of Magdala or Mary at the foot of the cross, or Martha, or, you know, you may associate with one of the characters that's kind of you. Actually, there's a bit of you and me in every single character in the gospel. That's why they're there. That's why they've chosen those scenes. It may be to have the courage to do something you know God is calling you to do, but you're putting it off. When you come to the time that you've set aside for meditation, recall this desire and ask God earnestly to give you this grace. Now, suggestion, go through the scene slowly, using your imagination to enter into it, seeking to enter into the heart of each of the people in the scene. That's the key, the heart, not the event. What a wonderful miracle that was. Never happened in my life and never happened again, but it was great. And it proves Jesus' divinity. Do you know what I mean? Total distraction to whatever anything's about. No, enter into it and see what was going on in the heart of Jesus, or the heart of the leper, or the heart of the woman caught in adultery. Feel your way into it. Pray to be open to the wonder of the way in which God is revealing God's presence and God's love in the scene, especially, of course, in Jesus. And when your heart is moved to speak to Jesus, allow it to do so, for it's this conversation and loving communion that primarily constitutes prayer. And now we're going to do it. Is that all right? So with your permission, I suggest you just close your eyes. Better to just sit there, get comfortable. And we'll be about 15 minutes doing this. And I'm going to just give you, if you dare to do it with me, a little bit of practice. So I'm going to read you a scene from the Gospel of John. Then I'm going to suggest some thoughts as you imagine it and just pray your own prayer. And you might find it easier to close your eyes, whatever you want to do. So I'm going to read now from John's Gospel, chapter 5, verses 1 to 9. In Jerusalem by the sheep gate was a pool called in Hebrew Bethzatha. It had five porticos in which lay many invalids, some blind, some lame, and some paralyzed. One man was there who'd been ill for 38 years. And when Jesus saw him lying there and knew that he'd been there a long time, he said to him, "Do you want to be made well?" The sick man answered him, "Sir, I've no one to put me into the pool when the water is stirred up. And while I'm making my way, someone else steps down ahead of me." Jesus said to him, "Stand up, take your mat, and walk." At once the man was made well again. He took up his mat and began to walk. So, imagine the pool now. Your way. Imagine it. There are five covered walkways in it. Imagine the surroundings. What kind of place is it? Notice the architecture. And the weather. Now let the whole scene come to life. See the people near the pool. How many people are there? What sort of people? How are they dressed? What are they doing? What kind of illness are they suffering from? What are they saying? What can you hear them saying? Okay, you're there. So what are you doing there? Why have you come to this place? What are your feelings as you survey the scene and watch these people? What are you doing? Are you speaking to anyone? now notice the sick man of whom the gospel speaks. Where in the crowd is he? How is he dressed? Is there anyone with him? Walk up to him and speak with him. What do you say to him? His reply? Spend some time getting as many details of his life and person as possible. What sort of an impression is he making on you? What are your feelings while you converse with him? As you are speaking with him, you notice that Jesus has entered this place. Watch all Jesus' actions and movements. Where does he go? How does he act? What do you think he is feeling? Jesus is now coming up towards you and the sick man, so what are you feeling now? You step aside when you realize that Jesus wants to talk to the sick man. What is Jesus saying to the man? And what does the man answer? Listen to the whole dialogue. Fill in the sketchy account of the gospel. Dwell especially on Jesus' question, do you want to be made well? Now listen to Jesus' command as he tells the man to get up and walk. The first reaction of the man. His attempt to get up. The miracle. Notice the reactions of the man. Notice Jesus' reaction. And your own. Jesus now turns to you. He engages you in conversation. Talk to him about the miracle that has just taken place. Is there any sickness that you are suffering from? Physical, emotional, spiritual? Speak to Jesus about it. What does Jesus have to say? Listen to his words to you. Do you want to be made well? Do you really mean what you say when you ask to be cured? Are you ready to take the consequences of a cure? You have now arrived at a moment of grace. Do you have the faith that Jesus can cure you, that he means to cure you? Do you have the trust that this will happen as a result of the faith of this community gathered here? Listen to his mighty words as he pronounces the words of healing over you, as he lays his hands on you. What are you feeling? Are you certain that his words are going to have an effect on you? In fact, have already had their effect on you, even though you may perceive nothing tangible at the moment? He knows the healing that you really need and is offering all the healing that the love of God can offer. Spend a few moments now in quiet prayer in the company of Jesus. Okay, my dear people, if you could come back to the real world that we're in, though you've just left the better world. That's just an example, which you're probably already familiar with, and timing is hard, and I'm not sure how fast or slow I went. None of that matters, as best I could. But you get the idea of a meditation, I think. And it's to do with the heart and the feelings and the imagination. And some will find it easier than others. So I'd like to conclude this. I haven't with some further thoughts for you on meditation. There's a simple variant of what I've just done with you, and that's typical. That was actually taken from De Mello, Siddhana. It's one of the examples he has in there, and I've borrowed it and perhaps adapted it a little. But this is the simple variant that you might even find more helpful. So we're all different. We've got to pray as we are. Firstly, focus on a scene from the Gospels. Look at Jesus and allow our hearts to go out to him in wonder and loving adoration as we watch the scene. Then, put yourself in as a second step. So there you're just reading about what happened 2,000 years ago as described dramatically by the evangelist. Second step is put yourself in the scene. For example, if it's the story of the leper, you watch Jesus healing the leper, and it's a lovely story in the end of chapter 1 of Mark. Then when you've done that, and for a few minutes, be the leper. Because we're all lepers. And enter the scene, and you be the leper at your second go at the story. And ask. And the third step is to be Jesus. Listen to him as he asks us to love others as he loves you. And we ask him to guide us to do to others as we've experienced him doing to us. There's lepers in your life, lepers in my life, lepers in the parish. You know, by leper I mean an outsider who doesn't belong and is just had a spouse die or lost a child or has someone on drugs or whatever it could be, you know. Like they're just feeling lost and bewildered and separated or whatever. So you be the leper, and then think of the lepers in your life down the street, or and think you're Jesus, really. Jesus says, you do to others as I've done to you. So think of how you might be able to console or touch, or you follow me. It's quite simple, really, but it's very real. Or you might be at the foot of the cross and you watch John and the mother at the foot of the cross. And in the second one, be John or be the mother. And have John there with you, or the mother there with you at the foot of Jesus' cross. And see what that does in your prayer. And lastly, be Jesus. And think of who sometimes you're wounded or I'm wounded. And I don't like getting wounded, I have to tell you. But when you do, maybe there's a redemptive thing in that. Maybe that can be love. Maybe you can pour out of love on the people that are wounding you, even, you know, like the Father, forgive them, they know not what they do. Or you follow me. It just goes on and on and on. But that's a simple three-step method that you might find helpful. And here's some advice from Teresa of Avila. And I've just got a little bit more to do with you. Learning from them about meditation. This is what she says. There are people who work almost continually with the intellect, engaging in discursive thought and meditation. You may be one of those people, you may not be. They do well because nothing further has been given to them, though it would be good if they spent some time making acts of love, praising God, rejoicing in God's goodness, that he is who he is, and in desiring God's honour and glory. In other words, get in touch with your own feelings and give expression to them rather than just be thinking all the time. These acts should be made as far as possible for their great awakeners of the will, says Teresa. Such people would do well advised when the Lord gives them these acts not to abandon them for the sake of finishing the meditation. Priests, for example, are supposed to say the whole of the office. I do bits of it, morning prayer and night prayer, and that's about it sometimes, mostly. because I do a lot of other stuff. I reckon that's just as good. But I'm not here to give a general confession. But so, when I'm giving clergy retreats, which I do a lot, I often say to them, like, say you start a psalm. You've put aside 10 minutes for morning prayer out of the liturgy of the word. Well, if you start a psalm and you read three verses of the psalm, my soul longs for you like a deer longs for running water. Say you start that psalm and you feel a deep longing in yourself and you spend the next 8 minutes with God speaking about your longing. Do you get me? Well, then you kind of finish that and it's 10 minutes is up, close the book and get on with your work. Like, you don't have to finish it because it's there. You're saying the rosary, and the first decade of the rosary captures your heart, and you pray in with the first decade, and you've got limited time. You're not a monk or a nun in a convent somewhere with that's your job or your life, so you've got limited time. Well, if you want to say the rosary, and then Mary isn't up in heaven saying, well, what about the other four decades? You know, it's got, like, it can't be like that. Well, I'm glad you're laughing because we're meant to. We get too distracted. Prayer is what the goal of everything is. So if you find yourself in prayer, you're in prayer. You forget the prepared talk. Thinking and reflecting. That was Teresa of Avila up till then. The rest was mine. Okay. Thinking and reflecting can be done in a prayerful way. It can help us to pray, but we need to remember that we can think about God from the outside, as it were, without being in communion with God. Prayer consists in the communion, not the thinking. You could have a sick child in there and you're sitting outside thinking about your sick child. Not a bad thing to do, but if that's all you did, it wouldn't be too good. It might be better to sit next to the sick child and hold the child's hands and just mop the brow or just talk gently. I don't know, you have to work out what to do, but being in communion is the point, isn't it? Teresa reminds us that what matters is love. She says, not everyone has the kind of imagination that makes meditating possible, as I did with you a minute ago, but everyone's capable of loving. Progress doesn't lie in thinking much, but in loving much, says this wise woman banging her nuns on the head, convent with 150 nuns in it, and that she could still meditate. God bless her. But, you know, like, so she warns us never to leave the humanity of Jesus behind for the reasons that we started this talk with earlier before we started recording on prayer, because Jesus is the icon of God. Jesus is the symbol of God. Jesus is the human expression that will most directly take us to the mystery. So don't say, oh, we've gone beyond him. She was told, Teresa, that you've got to leave the humanity of Jesus behind and get into this mystical prayer where everything's vague and general and wow, you know, whatever. And then she learnt after all that was rubbish. So she went back to Jesus. I am the way. I am the truth. I am the life. Follow me. I am in you and you are in me. You know, all the... So meditating on the Gospels with Jesus is pretty, pretty good advice. And anyhow, you've got to pray your way. Care, she says, only with moving quickly so as to see the Lord. So the chief value of Gospel meditation, which is our topic, is precisely that it keeps our focus on Jesus as long as you go into Jesus' heart. Now, as a missionary of the Sacred Heart, obviously that's the way I was trained, but there's no other way to do it. Otherwise, it's out there. Wasn't it interesting what Jesus did 2,000 years ago? He's not going to help your prayer. But entering into the heart will. It's not the discursive element in meditation that attracted Teresa, however. In fact, she found herself unable to do it. When she reflected on a gospel passage, she was drawn to move quickly so as to see the Lord. It was not thinking about Jesus that attracted her. It was being in Jesus' presence, being loved by him and loving him. And she writes, since I couldn't reflect discursively with the intellect, I strove to picture Christ within me. That's what she did. You don't have to do it. Work out. It did me greater good, in my opinion, to picture him in those scenes where I saw him more alone. That's what attracted her. Just her and Jesus. The agony in the garden or some scene like that. It seemed to me that being alone and afflicted as someone in need, he had to accept me. This is it's a woman writing, I reckon. No, I reckon it is a woman writing, and this is pretty wonderful female stuff. He's a man in a garden crying, and you women just can't resist it. It's good that you can't. So you know what I mean? It drew something of her feminine stuff out. I mean, we've got it too, but not the way you have. Because he was in need, he had to accept me, she said. It's lovely. I had many simple thoughts like these, and the scene of his prayer in the garden especially was a comfort to me. I strove to be his companion there. If I could, I thought of the sweat and agony he had undergone in that place. I desired to wipe away the sweat. It's clearly feminine, isn't it? And she's a woman, so that's the best way to go. Well, a bloke will have to do it some different way, but he's so painfully experienced. But I recall that I never dared actually wipe the sweat away since my sins appeared to me so serious. She didn't think she was good enough to be so intimate. And she's a saint, so don't worry if you don't feel too good. I remained with him as long as my thoughts allowed me to, for there were many distractions that tormented me. So if you're distracted in prayer, I'm happy to admit I'm distracted in prayer, and Teresa of Avila was distracted in prayer. I'd say Jesus was distracted in prayer. You know, we're human beings, for God's sake. We've got a mind that runs riot. And that's not sinful. It's good to reflect for a time, but we must sometimes remain by his side with our minds hushed in silence. If we can, we should occupy ourselves in looking upon him who is looking at us. I think I told you that thing that someone told me just a few weeks. I'd heard it before too, about the parish priest, I think, as I heard it. And there was a chap who used to come into the church and just sit there, and he was a bit of a derelict kind of a man, you know, but he'd come in and sit there in the church. And one day the priest went up to him and said, what do you do? And he said, oh, I look at him, he looks at me. So you can't do better than that. Keep him company, talk with him, pray to him, humble yourself before him, delight in him. It's all Teresa of Avila, and she's a doctor of the church because of her teaching on prayer. Anyone can learn the practice of gospel meditation. The communion about which Therese speaks comes, of course, from God. We shouldn't try and force it. She says, let it come gently. We're not running the conversation. Let it come gently. For our part, we must be careful not to be so caught up in our thoughts that we fail to notice the gentle call into communion. Teresa writes, I'm not asking you to now that you think about him, or that you draw out a lot of concepts, or make long and subtle reflections with your intellect. I'm not asking you to do anything more than look at him. Who can keep you from turning the eyes of your soul towards the Lord? In the measure you desire him, you will find him. He never takes his eyes off you. That's stunning, isn't it? He never takes his eyes off you. If you're experiencing trials or are sad, behold him on the way to the garden with great affliction. He bore in his soul. Having become suffering itself, he tells us about it and he complains of it. It's nice. Jesus complained about his suffering. We're not talking about heroes here. We're talking about real, human Jesus with the feelings that everyone gets. But he kept doing God's will. And it was hard. And I did get what I said at the beginning of the talk. Once you start thinking of Jesus as God, which of course you do need to do without realizing how subtle that theology is and complex it is, there's a danger that you'd think, well, he knew everything. So what, you know what I mean? He never got surprised, because God doesn't get surprises, I presume, to get it. So Jesus didn't get any surprises. You keep mixing up Jesus, you get the natures mixed. And Council of Chalcedon says, don't. They aren't mixed. They're not. His humanity isn't changed by being the incarnation of God. It's real human stuff we're talking about. Behold him, says Teresa, to continue, bound to a column, filled with pain, with his flesh torn in pieces by the great love he bears you. And that's 16th century Spanish stuff, and they love doing it, and you mightn't go in for that same way. So much suffering, persecuted by some, spat on by others, denied by his friends, abandoned by them, with no one to defend him, frozen from the cold, left so alone that you can console each other. Or behold him burdened with a cross, for they didn't even let him take a breath, says this woman. He will look at you with those eyes so beautiful and compassionate, filled with tears. He'll forget his sorrows so as to console you in yours. Merely because you yourselves go to him to be consoled and you turn your head to look at him. And she continues, O Lord of the world, my true spouse, are you so in need, my Lord and my love, that you would want to receive such poor company as mine? For I see by your expression that you have been consoled by me. See, she's imagining all this, isn't she? But it's true. Well, then, how is it, Lord, that the angels leave you and that even your Father doesn't console you? If it's true, Lord, that you want to endure everything for me, what is this that I suffer for you? What am I complaining about? I'm already ashamed since I've seen you in such a condition. I desire to suffer, Lord, all the trials that come to me and esteem them as a great good, enabling me to imitate you in something. Let us walk together, Lord. Wherever you go, I will go. Whatever you suffer, I will suffer. And to conclude this and give you a break, Teresa suggests that an image of Jesus may help you. She says to her sisters in the convent, you'll find it very helpful if you can get an image or a picture of the Lord, one that you like, not to wear around your neck and never look at, but to use regularly whenever you talk to him. He'll tell you what to say. So in our home, we had those pictures of the Sacred Heart, which I look at now and don't like artistically. So what? But it was simple and appropriate then, and so you find something that really attracts you. I've got a beautiful one at home of Jesus and the beloved disciple and Mary at the foot of the cross. That's just lovely, and I do like that icon of the Trinity, and there's other ones. I've got a wonderful one of Dominic, and you've got to find the ones that you like, not because someone else likes them, but because they speak to your soul, and you might find an image helps you, focuses your eye and your heart. That's what she says, and I think she's right, but it's up to you. The fruit of such meditations can extend over an entire day, especially if we can find a short phrase to capture the essential grace we've experienced during our time of prayer. We were trained that way, and as young men in the novitiate, the phrase may act as a mantra that you can carry on your breath as you go about your daily tasks. Teresa reminds us, you need never withdraw from this loving communion. Go within yourself even during your ordinary occupations. I remember once, for example, and I still like it, I used to have the mantra from the Last Supper of Jesus. There's plenty in John. You know, I am in you and you are in me. Just to give you an example. I am in you and you are in me. And I remember praying it one day, and of course I'm typical, I'm I. So I'm in you and I'm talking to Jesus. You see, I'm in you and you are in me. It's a nice prayer. And then halfway through the thing, it's going back years now, it shifted. And this is much better. The I now became Jesus. And he's saying, I'm in you to me. Do you get me? And you are in me. He's reassuring me. And that's actually closer to prayer, because I'm the subject of all my verbs is a bit of a problem. Do you get me? And Jesus becomes the one saying, I'm in you and you're in me. And it's Now, I'm listening instead of talking. So you find your own way. But that's the best I can offer you now on, quickly as it is, on two important aspects of prayer life. One is spiritual reading, and the other is meditation, particularly focusing on the Jesus of the Gospels.